I'm Mike Lubega, MSNBC, MLB.com, and my new novel, Robert B. Parker's Blood Feud.
Je suis Robert Lyon, the Globe de Boston, et ESPN.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and author of the new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. That was Bob Ryan in the middle there, for our non-French-speaking audience. And we welcome you to the Friday edition of The Sports Reporters. We do this Monday and Friday. Yes, it is the podcast edition of the long-running TV show on ESPN, if you're joining us for the first time. But it's twice as nice because we get to do it twice as often, and we get to set up games now for the weekend as well. And if we begin in the NFL, and we will eventually get to that 99-yard run by Derrick Henry in which he knocked over half of the opposing team, and we'll get to the Heisman Trophy, Urban Meyer, and some basketball talk about Carmelo Anthony possibly joining LeBron James in Los Angeles, because where else hasn't Carmelo Anthony played? But let's begin in the NFL, and a couple of games that maybe at the beginning of the year you would not have thought would have been this big, or maybe you would have. Dallas-Philadelphia battling it out, but not with records of, 10-2, but battling to stay relevant in the overall NFL chase and to try to win the NFC East. This is a fascinating game because of the fall of grace from Philadelphia, and they're trying to stand back up, and for the rise from really disarray that Dallas was in early on in the season, and now they may be playing the best football of almost anybody in the NFC.
Well, they certainly are playing defense, guys. I mean, their last four games, their point totals against are 20, 19, 23, and 10. And so that's been the number one story, obviously. But then we've alluded to time and again the overall ripple effect of Cooper joining the team on the offensive side. And Andy, what word would you like to use to describe the play of the quarterback? The maturation? What? I don't know what. I still don't trust him fully, but he has played well lately.
Well, I don't think it's just maturation. I think they finally got him a really good receiver. And, he was a pretty good quarterback when Dez Bryant was still catching passes and not acting like a knothead. And here's what's interesting about this. A month ago, we would have never thought that there was any possibility that the Cowboys and the Eagles would be playing a big game in December. Now they're playing a big game out of the pass in December. And if the Eagles win it, and if the Redskins, even with their quarterback situation, somehow find a way to beat the Giants at home, guess what? We got a three-way tie for first place in the NFC East. And no, Bob, listen, I was down on Prescott last year, but you can see the difference that Amari Cooper has made to this young man. And it's almost not fair to judge the quarterback because of the mess that last year became because of Ezekiel Elliott, okay? I think right now, the Cowboys are as ascended a team as there is in pro football. Now, that changes on Sunday if the Eagles rise up and beat them. But if the Cowboys win decisively, then this is, this is the old line about it. It's not where you start, it's where you finish. And the Cowboys will continue to finish strong.
3-5. They were 3-5. Yep. When you're 3-5 in the NFL, that's the halfway point. You're almost out of the discussion. People just say, well, forget about that. Dallas isn't going to have anything. So winning four straight, I've always said winning four straight or losing four straight is hard to do in the NFL. And I mean that part about losing, too. It's that balance the league that's why you see these. How on earth could that team win that game? Well, did they lose the previous three or four? It's really hard to continue to lose like that. Only teams like the Lions and Cleveland can do that. So Dallas had two things happen. They got Amari Cooper and they fired their offensive line coach, which is weird because all of us out in the rest of the hinterlands beyond Dallas always look at Dallas's offensive line as their biggest selling point, right? Mm-hmm. They always know how to protect. They always draft well for the offensive line and they always can protect their quarterback. But they fired their offensive line coach and they reorganized it. Now they run better. And when you have Amari Cooper, it's not so much what Amari Cooper does. It's what he does to the defense that they have to play him now. By having to play him, they might have to shift one guy over from the defense, and that opens more holes for Ezekiel Elliott, especially with an improved offensive line. So suddenly, they win four straight games, and 3-5 becomes 7-5. And in this NFC East, which reminds me, I was trying to think as you were talking, Mike, about what's the personification of this NFC East race where they keep sort of falling, get up and falling, get up. And all I could think of was those races they have at football games between the donut and the bagel and the muffin, you know, where they run, you know, Dunkin' Donuts, and where they run out onto the field and then they stumble and they fall and they knock each other over and they fall. And it's all preset, but it looks like somebody's going to win and then they don't, whatever. I don't know why that flashed into my mind, but one of these is the donut and one of them is the bagel. And one's going to win eventually, and the others are going to stop.
And here's the thing, Mitch, and we always talk, all of us, okay, about the glory of the long season in baseball. And how all during the baseball season, right, we talk about how the narrative can flip every 3 weeks or every month, okay? Who would have thought when the Dallas Cowboys were 3-5 that they'd be doing what they're doing and that the other team in Texas, the Houston Texans, when they were 0-3, would be going for their 10th win in a row on Sunday. And it's even a 16-game season can become rife with drama and subplots. And, yeah, I mean, I looked at, you know, we always talk about what we want to talk about first on this podcast. And obviously Rams-Bears is a sexy game. But I love the way the Cowboys are playing because we talk about this all the time. The sport is more interesting when the Cowboys are in play.
And, gentlemen, if they do get through this game and beat Philadelphia, the remainder of the schedule is highly favorable for the Cowboys.
They could run the table, Bobby.
They are at Indy, who, you know, are meh, you know, meh, you never know what, but last week were blah. Then they got Tampa Bay at home, and then they end up in the Meadowlands, Michael, against the ready mentally packing for the golf course Giants on the last day of the
season. Oh, no, Odell Beckham, Bob, he says if they're not going to make the playoffs, he wants to take some team on vacation with them. And okay, yeah, I mean, okay,
yeah. blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Odell.
Thanks very much for playing our game. And meanwhile, the bigger question is if Dallas gets out of the NFC East and ends up, you know, winning it, where do they stand relative to the rest of the NFC? Is this all, you know, a lot of drama within their own division, and then, let's face it, they're not going to win? Because of what they did when they played the Saints.
Yeah.
I don't think you can dismiss them against the elite teams, even though the elite teams are going to get home field and all the rest of it. The Rams, the Saints are miles ahead of them. But I don't think any of them want to play the Dallas Cowboys right now.
No, Mitch, and this could be, and it's. I think this is actually relevant, even though it happened, you know, several years ago. This could be the kind of run that the Giants made Super Bowl, they did go on the road. They beat everybody on the road, but again, they picked up momentum at the best possible time, and we cannot talk about the Cowboys without talking about the influence. Look at the two games we're talking about this Sunday, okay? Rams, Bears, Cowboys, Eagles. And who influenced these games? John Gruden did. John Gruden traded Amari Cooper to the Cowboys, and he traded Khalil Mack to the Bears. I cannot remember one football figure having this much effect on somebody else's seasons as Gruden has this year.
Gruden is to football what the Detroit Tigers are to baseball.
Yeah.
I knew
enriching,
that was coming.
Enriching other teams.
Ladies and gentlemen, I knew that was coming, Mitch.
That was pretty obvious coming from me.
You did not let me down.
Speaking of the Bears, they've got a big, big game against the Rams. Oh. And this is going to be a really fun game to watch. It's prime time. And I watched the Rams play the Lions here in Detroit, and I was not that impressed. I said that on Monday. They won, of course, because everybody can beat the Lions. But I was not impressed. The Lions' defense, which is not the Bears' defense, was able to contain Todd Gurley and even put pressure on Jared Goff, who did not have a fantastic game. And now you go and play the Bears at Soldier Field late at night on a Sunday night where it's really, really cold. The Rams don't have great record in cold weather, and this is a more important game, let's face it, to the Bears than it is to the Rams, and that stuff matters. You know, who was it, Parcells or Belichick, who said, you know, when all else is equal, who needs it more?
It's another Parcells line, Mitch.
Yeah. Well, the Bears need it more.
Needs it more. Yep.
Bears need it more to stay ahead of the Vikings. You know, they got to play the Packers and the Vikings. Vikings on the road, last game of the season. They don't want it to come down to that. So, and they get hepped up, and that defense gets all hepped up. And I think the Bears are going to win that game against the Rams based on what I saw the week before.
Except the only thing I everything you said I agree with, and then my flashing in my head is that hiccup they had against the Giants. And that just when we were all anointing them, let's see, honestly, yeah. The whole football world and the whole general, we were all anointing the Bears, and then they, you know, they lose. All right, so you can have a bad day. All right, anybody can have an off day, blah, blah, blah. But I just, that kind of took in, that kind of put a little halt for me on
No, the Bears listen, if Trubisky. That shoulder, and we don't know. Okay, we know what we.
But he is supposed to play Sunday.
No, he's supposed to play. I don't know how what kind of concerns they have about his shoulder going forward. They have no chance to do anything without him. I mean, but Chase Daniel has had decent games and then couldn't hold on to the ball in overtime against the Giants. But this is that sexy game we have been talking about all season. Defense against offense. It's mostly begin offense against offense. But what teams are we looking at now when we, Mitch, when we do get a cold weather game like this, okay? The defense of the Bears, and what were we just talking about? The defense of the Cowboys. And at the end, after a bazillion points this year, maybe that will tell the story in the NFL from now until the finish.
Gentlemen, there is one game, the number one statistically once again offense against the number one statistical defense, and that is Baltimore at Kansas City. Just throwing it out there. And Mike's favorite player on earth is now going for 4-0.
Lamar.
That's right. His new BFF. Lamar.
But you know, Bobby, you know, I thought he was the steal of the draft, and
you
said
did.
So at the time.
You
and
did.
And we all wondered if the first time Flacco got hurt or stumbled, if we were going to see this kid. Mitch, remember we saw all the creative ways they were using Lamar Jackson earlier in the season. That, you know, obviously, this is the big test, okay, going in there. But if he ever wins that game on Sunday, as Ryan likes to say from Death of a Salesman, attention must be paid. To the Ravens.
Well, yeah. Baltimore allows 17 points a game and 280 yards a game. They're the best defense in football. They now have this new wrinkle that, you know, and when you put in a new quarterback in the middle of the season or even late in the season, you know, teams don't have that much film to prep. And a guy who's unpredictable, as Lamar is, can take advantage of defenses that just don't know the tendencies or the trends. So, and I do you think that you know, the off-field stuff will affect the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yes, yes.
I mean, nobody's talking about that, but that's a big shakeup. They lost a superstar.
They lost they lost a great player, but they had a good one. I mean, Ware was beaten out. Ware's not terrible. He's not. He was beaten out by a better guy. But so, I mean, they. I don't think they're going to fall off the earth without Hunt. But clearly, that's a major loss. And yet, the replacement could be serviceable for what they do. Is that an unreasonable statement?
I guess maybe you think it's like an injury, like Kareem Hunt just, you know, had an ACL, he's gone, and they just sort of accept it and move on, as opposed to the controversy and, you know, and the way that he ended up exiting the team.
Yeah,
well,
do those things
affect players individually?
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I don't think so. I think they're all individual corporations. There are some, you know, very good personal bondings. We just saw Kyle Lowry blubbering on TV the other day about losing to Rosen, despite the fact he gained one of the three best players in the league as a teammate. Stop it. I mean, but maybe there's some of that in there, but I don't know. I think that it's more they're professionals and life goes on kind of thing. I just, you know, I mean, and all I go saying, well, you know, I wouldn't do anything like what he did or thank God they don't know what I did, whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? I'm not sure that that's going to be the reason that they have a problem. I think it's going to be more technical.
Mitch, as my man MF Doom likes to say, you know, we're going to find out if the Chiefs got more soul than a sock with a hole in it. Okay, you know what I'm saying, Mitch? Because, you know,
well, that's what I'm talking about, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking.
I am apparently not hip enough for the room right now, so I'll step aside and let Bob comment on rap. I know how much he likes that.
I think it's more than an injury, Mitch. I think it's more than an injury. This, in so many ways, this had been a dream season. And it could still be for the Chiefs. I'm not writing them off or anything like that. but this was a major hit. And I think that as much physical, the losing the physical presence of Kareem Hunt as it is psychological. I think they got sucker punched. Sucker punched. Much like that poor woman did, okay? And it will be very interesting to see how it doesn't just affect them on the field, but I do believe that there's a hole put in the locker room that you cannot measure till you see. You know what I'm saying, Mitch? Until we see how it plays out. And we're going to get a pretty good indication on Sunday, I think.
Oh, well, that's the first time back at on duty. We'll find, absolutely, absolutely.
All right, before we leave the NFL, we can't leave the NFL without commenting on Thursday night's 99-yard touchdown run. Record setter, 99-yard touchdown run by Derrick Henry for the Tennessee Titans. He ended up with 238 rushing yards, but that's not the story. The story is that one 99-yard run that featured more, I don't know how you want to look at it, either the best straight arming in the history of football or some of the worst tackling by Jacksonville.
Both. But Mitch, I no matter how many times you see it, you can't, first of all, 99-yard runs, they don't happen very often in the National Football League, but how many guys had a crack at him? And the first stiff arm was great, and then you said, well, I can't do that. And every time you look at the guys having an angle on him, you think, well, he can't possibly go all the way. And then I do believe, Mitch, you're right, they gave up. I mean, one guy just stood straight up as Derrick Henry just stuck a hand in his face and never even lowered his shoulder.
He actually stiff-armed one guy twice in two different, you know.
It's a record. Yeah. I think it's a record.
And then he threw him away, basically. He stiff-armed him, and then he said, just get out of my way, period. From what I've read, the funniest part of this is that in the huddle, somebody said to him, all right, you know, Derry, you got to go 99 yards because they're on the one. And apparently it was supposed to be like a quarterback sneak, apparently, was optioned off. And I'm watching as we're talking, number 21 gets pushed in the face, knocked over. Then 48 Jacobs gets basically pushed in the face and just thrown to the ground, one arm. Number 44 can't grab him. Number 21 can't catch him. And there he goes into the end zone. You know when players look tired at the end of a run, that it was, and especially even a running back. But 99 yards, that is going to be replayed forever and a day on that guy's resume. And shame on the Jacksonville Jaguars who have fallen so mightily from where they were last year that they could actually end up with a couple more losses. They could end up with the second or third draft pick come the next year's NFL draft instead of playing for a Super Bowl, as some people suspect.
It's absolutely incredible. They've lost. This was, I believe it's been previously stated here, 8 out of 9, and the only victory was 6-0 in that stretch.
I know that this will be dismissed, and maybe it will be dismissed conclusively. They kept showing my old friend Tom Coughlin up there in the press box last night, and do not rule out this man coaching the Jacksonville Jaguars again. He has to be disgusted. And I know no injuries have affected them. I know they have one of the worst quarterbacks in the league in Blake Bortles. But I'm telling you, don't rule out seeing him on the sidelines again. And Mitch and Bob, before we leave, and I just referenced them briefly, how many games do the Houston Texans have to win in a row before we start considering them a serious Super Bowl contender this year?
Well, the way the quarterback is, the way Watson's playing, I mean, I'm on board. Okay, so I'm on board with that, and this is something. And no, whose seat was hotter after week
Bill
three?
O'Brien, than right,
Bill O'Brien's.
Bobby. And
nobody's
Bobby,
seat was hotter.
If they beat the Colts, it's 10 in a row after 0-3. Now, obviously, and it keeps being stated, nothing like this has ever happened in the NFL.
Before we leave the subject of Henry, to cap off his rather historic evening, he had a 54-yard run during which, due to the technology of the day, you can clock guys now. He clocked in at 21 miles an hour, the fastest anyone has been clocked in the league, even this year, going to that touchdown.
That is
at 247 pounds.
Yeah, so, and that's with all those pads on.
Fastest RB.
Note to kids watching at home, when you watch the YouTube video and you see three NFL highly paid players trying to bring him down, not a single one goes for his legs.
Right,
not
that's what I mean,
Not a single one goes for it. They all try to pull him down by the shoulder pads.
Yeah,
you know, kids, I don't know what they're teaching you out there, but the tackle of a running back begins with his legs. All right, we'll leave that and move on to college football, where we saw a lot of interesting things coming with Ohio State. I'm not sure we saw Urban Meyer retiring before they even play their Rose Bowl, but his announcement shook up the college coaching world. I can tell you that in Michigan, there was a big roar of approval of Urban Meyer retiring.
Why would that be?
I don't know. It just was such a coincidence. And as with everything with Urban Meyer, it seems to me, you found yourself watching him and questioning, okay, what's the real story? I hate to say that, but he's kind of created that sort of cloud around him. What is he not saying? What's going on here? Now, it may be all that he's really not saying is his health, which perhaps, and respectfully so, he doesn't need to or want to talk about in great detail, but perhaps doctors have said to him, you know, you just can't do another season of this. He clearly, in that Maryland game, was difficult to watch, not just their performance, but his constant bending over and holding of his head. And perhaps they've just told him, I'm sorry, but your mortal body won't let you go where your immortal spirit wants to go. But I found Mike and Bob in his press conference one thing to be very, very telling. Nobody really picked it up in the quotes, but they asked him, all the quotes were, are you sure you're retiring? Is there any chance you'll come back? Are you going to put him someplace else? And he said something like, look, this game has changed. One pass, one safety, one bad call, and you're done. And I think, you know, he was kind of reflecting back on how much better a team do I have to put together, and we're still not playing for the college playoff here. And I don't know that I got what it takes to go through hanging on a single pass and a single loss, of a season to determine if I'm going to be successful or not. And that is not just a message about Urban Meyer. That's a message about how tenuous and difficult and pressure-packed being a college football coach at a major program is today.
I don't think it's changed all that much. He acted like this has all happened in the last couple of days. Mitch and Bob, back in the day when George Steinbrenner kept recycling Billy Martin as his manager, and I'm not comparing Billy Martin to Urban Meyer, the joke with us in New York was when you'd start to hear that Billy was tanned and rested, okay? When you would hear that Billy was tanned and rested, you could start counting the days until he was going to come back and manage the New York Yankees. Urban Meyer, I'll give you two numbers, the only two numbers that matter with Urban Meyer. His lifetime record is 186-32. That's one number. The other one is he's 54 years old. Is it inconceivable that in 2 years or 3 years, he said, you know what, I did have some health issues at the time. I'm feeling a lot better. And I think he has to go, if he's going to have one last act, it has to be somewhere other than Ohio State, because he wants to put as much distance as possible between himself and Zach Smith. And the only way to do it is to get out of there and go do TV or do something else. But do I believe, again, if there's some serious health issue, then all bets are off, obviously, okay? Do I believe we've seen him on the sideline for the last time? I do not.
I would tend to agree with that. And I got to pose the question. I think we would be remiss. The legacy thing, and how should he be remembered overall and beyond the WL, beyond the three national championships? And frankly,
Bobby, talk about the culture. You've been reading it again and again in the Boston Globe in their fine series on Aaron Hernandez. Florida was kind of a mess behind the scenes.
30 arrests. And he can't walk away from that. I'm sorry. I mean, here he is, but I mean, he can't escape the stench of that as far as I am concerned. I don't remotely admire Urban Meyer. I think he's a brilliant tactician, football coach, apparently a recruiter. I don't know what the charm is that for the recruiting, frankly, but he's got something. But the legacy is tainted in my mind by the both the Ohio State episode and even more in my mind by the continual rogue program that he ran at Florida. So I'm as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if he comes back again. I don't need him.
Well, all right. So because he doesn't need to be bashed anymore because you guys did a pretty good job, I'll take the slightly opposite side on this. Not that I'm defending him. I don't particularly like Urban Meyer, but I have to always recognize, and we all do in our positions, that what I like doesn't mean anything. You know, it has to be based on fact. He hasn't run a dirty program at Ohio State. He himself made bad judgment calls on Smith, but that's him. That's not the program, and that's his judgment of his staff. That's not the program. There haven't been multiple arrests at Ohio State.
But he is the program. He is the program.
I know, but that's I'm saying that's within him and the staff. In terms of the kids, since he's been there, and he's been there a while, we have to say, you know, that there hasn't been a multitude of arrests. Remember, he came in when Ohio State was in the shadows of what happened with Tressel and all the bad
which wasn't
there.
Exactly. It didn't exactly mean that Tressel was overseeing Alcatraz because of the
right
penalty.
Sweatsuits and tattoos that stuff. But that hasn't happened since he's been there, and we have to acknowledge that Ohio State is not some cesspool of arrests and all that. That didn't happen. The reason everybody is down on Urban Meyer currently, and there are many, you know, along the way, there have been different stops, is the whole Zach Smith situation and his words afterward, his lying to the media. And Mike, you said, you know, I don't know what the appeal is. I think when he goes into a home, he can be very charming. He can be very professional. And he can point to all the players he's put into the NFL. All the players he's put into the NFL. This is the thing that Jim Harbaugh doesn't have. He can talk about coaching in the NFL, but Urban Meyer can point to just this long, long list, and not just star players like Ezekiel Elliott, you know, offensive star players, but linemen and defensive players, and that's what gets recruits to want to come. And he is, like Alabama, and perhaps maybe like Clemson, you know, there are very few other teams that even fall in this. He's 2 and 3 deep at every position. He's Mitch. 2 and 3 deep, and that's good recruiting. He's an amazing recruiter. Whatever his style is, whatever he says to them, maybe he eats apple pie better than everybody else. I don't know, but he's an amazing recruiter. He's been an amazing tactician. He's a good game coach, and he hires strong staff. And he's quitting while the quitting's good. You know, if he does go someplace else, nobody's going to touch his Ohio State legacy. But I do think that there's something here about, man, I went through all this. That whole stuff of being suspended for 3 games to be in a year, which we still managed to win. All these headaches, there's all this stuff. And I still don't get to play for a national championship because I get bumped out because I got one loss. I do think that that's part of the story.
Everybody can't win every year. First of all, he's won 3 times. I mean, it's not like they had a bad year. It's not like, I don't know. I mean, if you put that much pressure on yourself, you got to win the national championship as opposed to putting a tremendous team on the field and see what happens, you know, and recognizing that everybody can't win every year, not even Nick Saban. I don't know. I mean, I got to ask you one thing, Mitch.
Bob, just let me go back to this, Mitch, okay? You don't think he was under the same, a field goal, a touchdown, a safety could screw us when he was in the meat grinder of the SEC and still managing to win national championships at Florida? I mean, come on. To me, this is a false narrative on his part, that the pressure's gotten worse. The pressure's always been the pressure. How come the pressure isn't affecting Nick Saban? Okay? How come
well,
he's
you don't know that it isn't. I mean, I'm not saying that the pressure itself has changed. I'm saying the cumulative effect of it. And 54 is to us young, and I guess in most professions it is, but 54 is still 54. It's not 34. And the guy he's handing the reins over to is 39. You know, there's a big difference between being 39 and being 54.
Nick Saban's 67, Mitch.
Yeah, Nick Saban may make one of these announcements one day that surprises everybody.
But he's
too.
13. Yeah, but if he does at 67 or 68 or 69, I'll say, okay, it, you know, the old Indiana Jones line. It's not the years, it's the mileage.
All right, well, then let me ask you, why is he quitting?
I'm taking the health thing as the – I'm taking that at least 80% face value. I mean, that, if he's
he
got
talked
this brain
about having memory lapses. I don't
he's
know.
He's got this
I
brain don't. Cyst he's had for 20 years or something, and it could be acute. my God, I mean, I don't know, that terrifies me. I'm going to take that at face value. God, I got to ask one thing. You're talking about Mitch. To your knowledge, has he ever offered any public, apology or whatever, or saying, I wish I had done things better at Florida? To my knowledge, I've never heard that.
Oh, no, him. No. Florida is so far in his rearview mirror. All right. And he's one of these guys that just doesn't, like a lot of coaches, I don't talk what I don't have to talk about. I'm not there anymore. Yeah. We're not talking about that. End of discussion.
All right. I got one thing, Bob and Mitch. Okay. For all the jubilation in Michigan, even if Harbaugh beats Ohio State next year, what are they going to say? Well, yeah, but you couldn't beat Urban Meyer.
Oh, yeah, he'll have to live with this. There's no
question. Yeah, I'm doing my parting shot on exactly that.
You know,
that,
we were talking about, Mike and Mitch, you guys were, you know, having different viewpoints a little bit on the pressure thing and Saban and all that. Saban strikes me, the entire thing is joyless. And as soon as he wins one, he's got that smirky, at the best, that little smirky thing. And he's already thinking about the next recruiting visit already that night. He'd like to make it that night. The next recruiting visit, the next staff meeting, the next thing. I mean, that's what drives him. I don't know what he gets out of it. As opposed to, I want to throw you out a guy who, now, I don't know him. I've met him a couple of times in a very brief social circumstance, and he comes on instantly likable, unlike these other two guys we're talking about, neither of whom come on instantly likable. And that is Dabo, who seems to be relishing all the good stuff that comes with it. Dabo seems to be enjoying the process, enjoying every bit of it. If he doesn't win, all right, he doesn't win, but he's not going to put his head in the oven. Am I wrong? But
I think he
enjoys himself.
But these other
guys don't enjoy themselves.
He hasn't even turned 50 yet, and maybe there is something to that. Let me just say one more thing. How'd you like to be a tenured professor at Ohio State and find out the terms of Ryan Day's new contract to coach in Buckeye Nation, okay? 5 years, $4.5 million a year for this guy who's now taking the next step. That is a whole lot of money for a guy who's going into the barrel now in Columbus.
Yeah, but you know why that is, Mike. I mean, and it's not justifiable, but it's just factual. If they don't pay him that kind of money, if they say, well, you got to earn your keep, and you're just starting, so you're only worth $2 million a year, he'll be gone in a year. You know, as soon as he wins something, he'll go to some other school and for bigger money. I promise you this, if he takes them successfully, mimics what Urban Meyer did, and they have a season next year like they did this year, they'll rip up that contract and give him another one. Yeah. And it'll be closer to $7 million a year and not four. So, that's the way this game is played. And we've long ago passed the days where how would a tenured professor feel if they saw the football coach's contract or the assistant football coach's contract?
I just hope for Jimmy Harbaugh that he can beat Ryan Day, because can you imagine
what it'll be
like in Ann Arbor next year if Ohio State beats them again with Urban Meyer out of the room?
And that game's in Ann Arbor. Meanwhile, the Heisman Trophy coming up. And once again, after all the talk, it comes down to a couple of quarterbacks. One day they're going to invent the Heisman A and the Heisman B. You know, there's going to be like the Oscars thinking of splitting into drama and comedy categories, because it's just not fair to throw them all into the same one. But once again, we have an Alabama quarterback and an Oklahoma quarterback. Oklahoma won it last year, and Jalen Hurts was in the running last year for the Heisman as well. Now Tua is up for it, which could be ironic. I still don't have an answer as to whether Tua is going to play in the playoff game definitively, or Jalen Hurts is going to be. He could be the first guy to win the Heisman and have played his last game for the season already. But who do we like in that race if it really does come down between him and Murray?
Mitch, just know this, okay? During the award season, just to protect that ankle, Tua will be flying around in a private plane. I don't want you to worry about long security lines. I don't want you to worry whether he's gone through the process to get TSA pre. They will be flying him around in a private plane. And I know, Bob, I know you and I will both rest easy knowing that that will give the Crimson Tide their best chance when they get to the semifinals.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And, well, there's a third quarterback involved, too, Dwayne Haskins.
Who he's great. Oh, my God.
Touchdown
he's
passes.
As good as anybody. He probably won't. Mitch, you know this. He probably won't win. Nobody's playing better than he is right now.
Now, last night, gentlemen, there was an awards ceremony and various awards ceremonies, and Mr. Murray won the AP Player of the Year and the Davey O'Brien Award as the symbolic of the best quarterback. Meanwhile, Tygo Viola won the Maxwell Trophy as the best and the Walter Camp for quote unquote best player. And just let the record show, the last five Walter Camp winners have won the Heisman. I am going to go out and predict that Murray's going to win.
Oh, really?
The early speed of Tygo Viola has been overtaken. I'm just going to predict it. And I voted. I'm not saying who I voted for because I'm going to be fair to the, they don't want you to do it. I'm not going to do it. I will say I did vote for a quarterback. I didn't, go all
Oh, there's all a bombshell. There's a bombshell.
Yeah. But anyway, I just got a gut feeling. I think there's a groundswell for Murray. And actually,
but Bob, who do you think from the start of the season to the end? Who do you think has been the best college football? Not the one who's playing the best at the end. Who do you think has compiled the best body of work? Because I still think it's Tua. And I love Kyler Murray, by the way. If he wins, this actually, I think, Mitch, there'll actually be some drama this year.
Funny. The Tua thing is funny in regard to the fact that so deep into the season, he had yet to appear in the fourth quarter. And therefore, the stats were prorated for three periods, and they were boxcar number stats. And had he played in those fourth quarters and put up garbage, more, another 150 yards and another TD, or it would be astronomical numbers. It would be undeniable for him. But he had the great early start, and not that he's fallen off. He hadn't fallen off at all. But the other two have come on. And particularly Haskins, but I think if either Haskins or Murray's going to win, I think it'll be Murray.
And Mitch, don't you think Haskins, when you look at the three of them, is the most pro ready of the three guys?
Yep.
Well,
and
yeah.
He,
that's
by the way,
a
he
different
has an option
evaluator
too, in that regard.
Yeah, so. That's a different evaluator. It's not what the Heisman's supposed to use. I don't know. I mean, I think you can make a bunch of different arguments.
Hello, Gino Toretta.
Yeah, you can make a bunch of different arguments. Tua is really the biggest challenge game that they had against Georgia. He didn't play well, and before he got hurt, he wasn't playing well. And you can only judge when you're playing with Alabama. There are precious few opportunities to see a tight game situation, and so these 73-3 games really don't show you a whole heck of a lot. The whole team is basically could win a Heisman Trophy from those games. So when you do get in a tough game, he didn't play particularly well. Murray. When they had their rematch game, did play well, and they beat Texas. And, you can start arguing who had tougher schedules and all the rest. What I find the most amazing about this whole discussion of the Heisman Trophy is that, first of all, I love the fact that they're going to play each other, because I do think it's going to be 1-2, even though Haskins has come on. I think it's going to be 1-2 in the voting, and whoever ends up winning, and they're going to play each other. So the Heisman winner and the Heisman runner-up, most likely, are going to play on December 29th. That's great. But Murray says, we'll see if he says it in a couple months, he's going to give up football after this year and go play baseball because he was drafted by the Oakland A's and he loves baseball. I don't think that's ever happened, has it, where a Heisman Trophy winner has put the trophy down and say, thanks very much, I'm going to play another sport?
Well, yes, no. Charlie Ward.
But right after he...
Not directly after, I don't believe.
All right, can I tell you something amazing might happen, by the way, if Kyler Murray does win the Heisman Trophy? You would have back-to-back Oklahoma quarterbacks.
That's ridiculous.
Nothing like that has ever happened. I mean, Doc Blanchard and Glenn Davis were running backs, and they won back-to-back for Army. And we had a 1 year in between Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart, okay? This would be an unprecedented thing to actually happen. And guess what? Guess what? It'll be just another reason why the coach of that team is going to be such a hot name once this college football season is over with the National Football League.
And by the way, if, in fact, Tua wins, that would mean that two of the last four Heisman Trophy winners came from the same Catholic high school in Honolulu. How's that?
That's a recruiting pitch. All right. Finally, before we get to our parting shots, there is some talk out of the NBA, which, again, we caution this by saying this is talk. But we heard it, and we were talking about it before the show. We said, talk or not, we have to talk about this. Nice. That LeBron James is reportedly interested in Carmelo Anthony joining the L.A. Lakers. Carmelo is technically still a Houston Rocket, but he's not with them, and they basically
have parted. And other
company.
People are technically running the Los Angeles Lakers, right?
Technically, like, right, but apparently that doesn't matter. LeBron James says it, and therefore it's like that bumper sticker. You know, God said it, I believe it, that settles it. LeBron said it, we do it, and that settles it. What do we make of the possibility of Carmelo Anthony on the L.A. Lakers with LeBron James?
Bob, don't you think that some, like 5 years down the road, don't you think we're going to hear that the star player in the Russian league is saying, you know, if we could just add my friend Carmelo Anthony, I think he could put us over the top. Or, you know, or the top player in China, okay? This, to me, is amazing. It speaks to, though, you know, for all of the basketball fans and all of the Carmelo haters, okay, this man is extremely popular in his own sport until he comes to play for your basketball team.
Yeah, the last two times, Mike, they just haven't been good fits, right? So we just have to find the right fit. I must say that I was preaching out all that there's a spot for him coming off the bench and being an offensive catalyst somewhere, and that, you know, I keep citing the Olympic thing and all that, and I don't know, maybe he can do a little muscle memory thing and when he sees hooks up with if and when he hooks up with LeBron, you know, to recreate that glorious day in London when he came off the bench and jump started the team against the Spaniards. But I'm a little bit skeptical now that that's ever going to happen anywhere.
Mitch, don't you just want Carmelo to be happy? Don't you just want the guy to be happy in whatever time he has left in professional basketball?
Yeah, so
don't you, Mitch?
It's a very high priority on my Christmas list this year.
Yeah, you know, he's got to replenish that nest egg, Mike. You know, that's important before we, you know.
But, okay, let me ask you this. Could the Lakers, I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. Could the Lakers turn out to be a good fit for him?
And until that happens, I mean, they get him and it doesn't work, I guess.
LeBron made it work with J.R. Smith. Well, is it impossible that he could make it work with Carmelo Anthony?
Here's the two words that introduce a problem here that we have not yet uttered. Luke Walton. He happens to be the coach, okay? We keep talking about, well, LeBron can make it. The problem with Carmelo Anthony isn't that other players like him. A lot of other players like him. And a lot of other players see his game, and players see it through the eyes of, you know, hey, the guy can ball, we'll get him on the team, we'll figure it out. But he still would have to do, unless LeBron's now going to determine minutes for everybody in the game and everything else that goes on there, in which case Luke Walton can go home and can, you know, come back at the end of the year and get his ring. It's the coach who has to decide how he's going to use him.
It would be a decoder. But, Mitch, don't you think it would be a decoder ring and not a championship ring?
His problems have been with coaches who have, you know, tried to fit him into a system. Yeah, he clearly can shoot, and he can grab you some rebounds, and that's it. He's not going to make anybody else better. If LeBron James has such power over him that Carmelo Anthony will just come there like a happy puppy and say, just tell me where to go, LeBron, then sure, fine. He's got natural skill. He's a big guy, and he can give you some minutes. And if LeBron says, you're going to sit on the bench until we need you, now come in the second quarter with 7 minutes left. Okay, now you're going to go out, and you're not going to start the third quarter. Sure, of course he could help. But is Carmelo going to do that? And is Luke Walton going to allow that to happen?
I think at this point in Carmelo's career, after he was told after about 15 minutes that the Rockets did not want him, okay, I would think that has been a bit of a life lesson if it took this long for him to require a life lesson. But, Mitch, I continue to be fascinated by the Los Angeles Lakers and the presence of the greatest player on the planet on that team. Right now, you look at the standings right now, They are in fifth place in the conference. They are 15-9 after a slow start. Okay, there's only one team ahead of them that's better, that they think is better than them, and that's the Golden State Warriors. Do they think they can beat the Clippers? Yeah, I bet you they do. Do they think they can beat the Thunder? I bet you they do. Do they think that the Denver Nuggets are going to stay in first place? I bet you they think they don't. So listen, they already brought in Rondo, and somehow that didn't sink the team, even though he obviously spent some time away from them. Okay. LeBron's presence there, and we know that he becomes the general manager of any team he plays for. I'm fascinated by the Lakers and their prospects going forward. And if they think that he can help them a little, why not bring him in?
Well, I agree, and I'm impressed with them. I didn't expect them to even make the playoffs, and I thought they would be in a mix.
Did you really think they wouldn't, Bob?
I honestly thought that they would be no better than in the mix between, you know, the 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There'd be some major cluster there in the end, and they'd be among those four. That's what I thought, and I didn't think they'd be this good yet. And they're only going to get better, not worse. There's no question about that. And, I've been impressed. And by the way, the game he played the other night, and that 40-point game with the he just reminded everybody. I love it when people like that are able to make statements. Michael was able to do it near the end of his career. Bird did it once with a 46-point game against Portland late in his career. I love it when they showed it. And he's still the best player.
And, Mitch, you know, you spent a lot of time out there. Who would have thought that the Staples Center would once again be one of the capitals of the sport this year for both teams?
Yeah. No, this speaks to the power of LeBron James. We've not seen a guy like him. I mean, really, in NBA history, you know, Michael Jordan was a singular talent, but Michael Jordan, you know, by the time he played with his second team, the act was over, and he didn't lift them to anything more than, what, a first round of the playoffs, and that was it. LeBron James has moved all around the basketball globe, and everywhere he goes, he turns teams that were weak into winners, and you have to take your hat off to him. He changes the culture. He changes, obviously, the equation. His singular talent, and now they're getting criticized for it out there, the reliance on him, but that's the pattern. You get LeBron, and you rely on LeBron until finally you assemble a team around him where he doesn't have to do absolutely everything, although most of the time he's still doing absolutely everything. Last time he was seen in the NBA Finals, he was pretty much doing absolutely everything for Cleveland, and you know, you can't really criticize. You're bringing in a guy who can do absolutely everything, and you're saying, but we can't let him do everything. Yes, you can. That's how you win. But Bob, you're the basketball historian amongst us. In the history of basketball, has there ever been a guy who has done this in this many places and elevated excellence with that many different teams?
No, because first of all, in the old
nobody
days,
moved in the old days.
The mobility of that nature wasn't common. Right. And it's funny as you
Wilt
speak
to
that.
Bob, don't you think Wilt?
Wilt
that's the only possible historical reference point, right?
Yeah. Now he did not win in Philadelphia the first time as a Warrior. They got to one finals, okay, with him. Then it goes to the 76ers, and they win with one of their best one-season teams of all time. And then, of course, he goes to the Lakers, and they win. Wilt would be the closest thing to it. And I was just thinking the flip side of that, by the way, just is you knew I was going to get to this, so I have to, is Russell, who stayed in one place for 13 years, won 11 times, won his first championship in 1957, and his last in 1969. And turned over the entire everything, including the coach, Bill, because in the end he was his own coach, literally, not the way unofficially LeBron is. He was technically the coach. He had turned over every teammate, turned over Red Auerbach, and gone, and he was still winning. That's the flip side of being the anchor of a franchise.
Yeah. You know, Mitch and I have both been all over the place in the last month or so with book tours. I actually did two book tours in the same month. And when I would throw it open to questions at the end, and after we had stopped talking about my books, the fascination with LeBron and the fascination with the LeBron-Michael debate, Mitch, I don't know how many sports questions it's such a fun thing, and I always tell them the same thing, and it sounds like I'm debating against myself. If I had to pick one guy to play for my life, I'd pick Michael. But no player I have ever seen in my life loving basketball has ever influenced a game in more different ways on a nightly basis than LeBron James does.
Yeah, I will paraphrase that for you, Michael. And for me, I agree with you. If I got to play for my life, there's no question the most ruthless competitor at the high level of skill that the game has known was Michael Jordan. I want him defending my honor, my life. But I'd rather watch LeBron James play.
I agree, Bob. I agree.
The scope, the range of his skill and his first of all, it's his greatest asset is still passing. And we love that. And Michael's greatest asset was putting the ball in the basket. He could pass, but he wasn't the passer anywhere near that LeBron is. And so there you go. So I think we're on the same page on that one.
No, we are. But the thing is, they're at that level now in this discussion, but LeBron's not done. And, he's not done.
And
Michael's
I'm glad he's not done, Mitch, you know?
Yeah, listen. No, he's an incredible force of nature to watch. I would tend to say that this is his last stop because it makes the most sense in terms of his post career. But who knows? Yeah, who knows? You never thought Michael Jordan would be a Washington Wizards uniform. You just don't know.
All right, listen. Before we get to party shots, and before I tell you about our friends from Gillette, just going back to the Heisman conversation, Ryan. We were talking about quarterbacks. Do you know who the last non-quarterback was to win the Heisman Trophy? Just to bring a nice bow around this discussion, Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry. I was going to say, I bet it was Derrick Henry. Ah, very good, Derrick Henry. Yeah.
All right, listen, before we get to parting shots, you know how happy Bob and Mitch and I are to have Gillette having added their brand to our brand because it is the class name in razor blades. You've heard me say this every time this subject is raised. I never had any choice about what razors I was going to use because my dad gave me a Gillette razor when I started to shave. When my three sons started to shave, I gave them one. It is state of the art, and it continues to get better. It doesn't matter whether it's the Mach 3 or the Pro Shield or shaving cream, whatever you're talking about, Gillette does not rest on its laurels. And now they prove that with Gillette On Demand. With Gillette On Demand, you can cut out all of the trips to the pharmacy and having to open the thing, which I just can't do. If you subscribe to Gillette On Demand, you can get Gillette quality blades at the best value and convenience. And you can get those blades, again, delivered directly to your door. You subscribe to Gillette On Demand today and get 50% off your first order with the special offer code SportsReporters50 at checkout. Enjoy free shipping and every fourth order free with the subscription. Visit Gillette online at GilletteOnDemand.com and use SportsReporters50 for 50% off your first order.
Thanks, Mike. All right, it is time now for our parting shots, and Bob Ryan leads off.
You know, guys, it's a weekend for football titans. No, not Alabama, Clemson, Notre Dame, or Oklahoma. Talking about Division III Titans. Undefeated Mount Union plays once beaten, and that was by 2 points, Johns Hopkins. Undefeated Wisconsin Whitewater plays undefeated Mary Hardin Baylor. Mount Union is a 13-time champion and a 6-time runner-up. Wisconsin Whitewater is a 6-time champ and 3-time runner-up. Mary Hardin Baylor won it in 16 and finished second in 03 and also last year. Johns Hopkins is the leader for the Division III Learfield Directors' Cup, which goes to the best all-around D3 male and female program. And you thought all they did was turn out doctors and lacrosse players. Now, pity the defensive coordinators. Johns Hopkins is scoring 43 a game. Wisconsin Whitewater is scoring 44 per. Mount Union averages 52. Mary Hardin Baylor averages 54 and has had a 77, two 80s, and a 91. The finals will be Friday the 14th in Shenandoah, Texas. Tell me you wouldn't like to be there.
It will be interesting over this year and the next, and who knows, maybe even the one after that, to see if and when and where Kareem Hunt plays football again. If he gets the second chance from the NFL that Ray Rice never got. Rice was in decline when that elevator video from Atlantic City got him the death penalty from his sport. But Hunt is a kid, an extremely talented kid with tremendous upside and a tremendous future until his own security video surfaced. And not only took his season, but may have forever altered a dream season for the Chiefs. Do I believe Hunt will play again? I do. He will eventually go on a redemption tour and somebody will sign him and say all the redemptive things about second chances. And at that point, ask yourself a question. Will Colin Kaepernick still be given a second chance by the NFL? Or will Kaepernick still be serving out his own life sentence, not for striking a woman, but for taking a knee?
You know those scenes in the movies where a fight is about to happen and then one of the guys walks away and the other one yells, "Come back here!" I kind of see that repeating with Jim Harbaugh and Urban Meyer. Meyer has bloodied Harbaugh's nose the last 4 years, beating him all four times, even when, as in recently, Michigan supposedly had the better team. And that last win stung worse than all of them. Harbaugh vowed that he and the Wolverines would work their tails off to make sure next year it did not happen again. Well, it won't happen again next year now, at least not in the way that it happened before, because Meyer has walked away. He left the game with a perfect record against his rival, like the boxer who floors his opponent and then retires. I'm not sure which irked Harbaugh more, losing to Meyer four straight times or not getting the chance now to avenge it. But all this recent talk about Harbaugh going to Green Bay to coach Aaron Rodgers in the NFL seems to me to come from people who really don't know Jim Harbaugh. I cannot imagine him wanting to walk away from this fight, not without some chance to avenge his 0-4 record. But it won't, and won't ever be, against Urban Meyer, no matter how many times Harbaugh yells, "Come back here!" That's going to wrap it up for today's program of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We do this every Friday and Monday, so we'll be back in just a couple of days with a lot of the news over the sports weekend. If you like what you heard, leave us a comment. If you didn't like what you heard, leave us a comment. We appreciate hearing from you. And also, you're telling your friends that they can get this podcast, especially if they enjoyed the TV show and have been asking, as many people ask us when they see us, "Hey, I really miss the Sports Reporters." Well, the Sports Reporters is here just in this form. You can get it anywhere where you get popular podcasts, including, of course, radio.com. We will see you on Monday. Until then, on behalf of Mike Lupica and Bob Ryan, this is Mitch Albom saying, have a great weekend.